Okay, so the last story that we have in Parashat Noach is story in Parshat Noach is is Migdal Bavel. Oh, what am I doing? I'm in this box already. Is Migdal Bavel? Now the question of the exact crime, if there was one of Migdal Bavel, is elusive. We've definitely talked about this before, right? That some of the Mefarshim believe that there was no sin at all, right? There was just a they happened to fail in the their responsibility of Puruvu Umilu et Aretz, because they were all living in one place. So God just had to make them disperse, but there was no sin at all. Others say, no, it was the problem that they weren't dispersing, but that was actually a sin, because they knew that they were supposed to be doing that. You know, some talk about idolatry, some talk about not quite idolatry, rebellion against God. I'm sure we've talked about the modern perspectives that read it in context of ancient Near East and the ziggurats and what Bavel, how Bavel was understood, right? To be Bab Ilu, the Shar Hashamayim, right? The gate to heaven. This was the self-understanding of Bavel, and therefore this is a polemic against Bavel, right? There are many different perspectives. But following what we've been doing this year, I'll focus on one, or one or two. What I think is interesting in Parshanut, and this is the point I want to make today, because again, a full share on this, we can talk about Migdal Bavel forever, is that often when you have something elusive, so in addition to the cues in the text, what drives people to read in a certain way is, right, if besides for textual cues, is life experience. And the interesting thing is you find that a lot here, that several, especially modern Mefarshim, read this story in a way that is not implausible in the text, but when you read them, you are quite clear that they're doing more, they're accomplishing more than just interpreting the text, but they are reading their modern context into this story, and you know, it is more personal than that. And you find that a bit in the Netziv and David Tzvi Hoffman, who are both moderns, right? Who are these people? Who's the Netziv? Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. He's essentially amongst the fathers of the modern yeshiva movement, being one of the fathers of Volozhin, the father, really, of Volozhin. And Rudolf Tzvi Hoffman, we've talked about in 19th century Germany, part of that modern, whatever it's called, modern Orthodox, neo-Orthodox. In academic literature, it's usually neo-Orthodox, but it's, you know, the German modern Orthodoxy, essentially, that emerged. But both of them are therefore exposed to the rise of the modern rise of nationalism. Right, this is what's happening in the late 18th, beginning of the 19th century. You're thinking, right, the Napoleonic Wars, you know, everything going on in Prussia, in Germany, right, all the empires that lead to essentially World War I in the beginning of the 20th century, right, all those forces are beginning to be quite dominant already in the 19th century. So the Netziv and Rudolf Tzvi Hoffman are already exposed to this, so it's not surprising that they're starting to talk about this in political ways that might resonate with us. Meaning, even if the Barbanel is also talking about this story in ways that resonate with his history, that's the political landscape of 500 years ago. But the last 200 years, we are more familiar with the history, and you see that they are clearly reading this story with an eye towards what they have seen in their time. So the Netziv, says as follows. Right, he said, right, I mean, he goes through the whole thing, but what exactly is his concern? So he says the concern is the use of force to enforce homogeneous thinking and action, right? This is the problem, is some sort of early totalitarianism, right? That's the problem that he sees. So in Pasuk Dalet, for example, he says, why are they worried if people will go to another country? Why do they care? He said, the key is they don't want anyone leaving because they want everyone to think the same. If people leave, then you can't control how they think, right? And you want to control how they think because you want them to think the same way. So you keep them in one place. And anyone who would think differently, they would burn them. Let's get another quote of it. One second. This is his parish throughout the whole parak. What you already see, right, is it sort of makes sense as you are, right? This is a reality, right? It's like if someone read George Orwell and then read Migdal Babel, right? They might think, oh, the whole world will be organized into three, right? Major, whatever, what? Not classes, countries. Oh, 1984, right? Just three big countries, and you don't want anyone leaving because everyone has to think the same, whatever that is, right? And that's the problem, right? Where that particular formulation is very much a modern formulation. It makes more sense when you are aware of an attempt at empire building in the total and complete way that you start to see in the 19th century. Where, again, could people have thought of this before? Yes. Is it a plausible parish, objectively speaking? Yes. Do I think that in this case they're probably speaking a little bit to the modern political reality that they're seeing? Probably also yes. In Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, he is After the problems of the Dor HaMabul that are essentially, this is a very fascinating perush, the Dor HaMabul is essentially a problem of division and fighting because everyone's stealing. So now the Torah wants to show you the opposite, which is the potential problems of unity. Yeah, of unity, of getting along too well, right? In a coercive way. Because the people, they all had different identities, they all spread out, they made different countries. When he said, what's the benefit of having different countries? When one of them starts to descend into oblivion or moral oblivion, right? So their society will fall apart and there'll be other people, right? But that's only if you have multiple countries. Kishem shavara kashem migaber or shibitzido. Echad sharakia al ananim ha-kodrim shibitzido ha-achir. Kach gam b'toldot ha-amim. Chayim u-pilot neged Elohim. Just like the rainbow basically pierces through the clouds, if you have multiple nations, some were not godly and some are others, right? That eventually, when there's multiple nations, so one of them will come to the fore. But tarbut chadasha mitpatachat al risotasha kodmata, right? In general, civilizations build on previous civilizations. Zu amid marede keneged hatika yomin v'zer lichvosh shemimav, etc. And he says, kol ora en eshut, as long as people are basically good, it's good to have multiple nations because each of them has their own identity and together they work together. But he said, look, if all of the nations were to come together for God, eventually, at the end of time, that's the one good way. But if everyone tries to come together not for that, so then, that's a problem, right? If everyone's coming together not for God, so then there is a totalitarian state, essentially, where they're immoral and there's no voices to challenge it. So if it's the end of days and everyone's joining as one nation under God, that's fine. But if it's not the case, right, then it's a problem. And again, my guess is, and others have pointed out, that you know these 19th century Mefarshim starting to right, well, you know, there's importance to different nations and having different identities. And it's really not good to have one empire take over the whole world, especially when that empire is not founded on godliness. Right? That type of interpretation, as much as it's plausible always, in the rise of nationalism and the attempts at taking over the world of people like Napoleon, right, or later World War I, and everything that was basically happening in between, they are sensitive to those political movements, and therefore they're seeing the damage of an attempt for one nation to take over the world and make the whole world in its own image. And therefore, when they see the hints of that in the Parsha, they're right. They are more likely to pull those hints out. And therefore, it doesn't seem to be accidental that in the 19th century, when this is really the question of nationalism, independent nationalities versus universal domination of empires, where that is really omed al haperek, that this is the type of parshanut that is going to be offered by people living within it. Right? So that is just some thoughts on it. Obviously, there are many other perushim on it, but this is just one perspective that I think resonated with certain modern thinkers simply because of the political realities. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if, I'm sure there are articles out there right now who will say, the problem of Migdal Babel is Lenin think. Or, or in even modern cultures, I'm sure there are people who will say, the problems of Migdal Babel are essentially the thought police of modern liberalism or modern conservatism, right? Meaning everyone plugs in whatever they want. You can say that the problem here is trying to get uniformity of thought. But what tips you off to that often is affected by what you see around you. And I'm sure there are modern perushim that have basically written it in the way that I've just suggested, though I haven't really looked too hard. I don't care that much, but okay.